This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Guitar Nerds, so you best get your nerd on. But if you want a little more, well, we've got a Patreon, a place of such majestic wealth for any guitar player, where I can drink a pint of gin and talk about John Mayer. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. That's right. Get your nerd on.
Welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hello.
And Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And this week we're pretty light on new releases, which is great news for us because it means we can dive headfirst into the cavernous maelstrom that is the questions taken from both the Facebook group and our Instagram. And we're going to take a stab at some interesting questions about guitar building, nationalism, and kit guitars.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but
is this what Saturday mornings do to you? Is this what you turn into when we make you get up early on a Saturday?
Yes, I make it like more of a sort of InfoWars style podcast. It's
okay.
It's going to be
Can't
great.
Can we make it a little bit more like Live and Kicking?
Oh, 1-8-1-8-1-1-8-1-8-1.
Andy Peters.
Up. Was that Live and Kicking? Where they had that game where people phoned in and had to guide people through a maze by just saying up, left, right or down?
Anyone who's that. Not in their sort of early to mid 30s and English isn't going to have any idea what we're talking about.
Saturday morning TV. That's
Saturday
what
morning
I'm saying.
TV.
I miss Saturday morning TV. Instead of Saturday morning podcasting with you chumps.
Yes, yes, sorry. Yeah, we are podcasting early this week. Hence why the news is late, as the news is light because we were podcasting late last week. So
why are we podcasting early? I can't remember. Who can't do?
I can't podcast Monday. Montauk.
Right, Matt's fault. Matt Knight's fault. So this week is not going to be as interesting, and it's all Matty's fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But there's a whole weekend of news that we're missing out on. You never know what happens at the weekend.
It is an incredibly light time of year. I've got a feeling that we're not going to miss out on too much. But there have been some cool bits. But anyway, I mean, aside from the news and courtesy of ex guitar nerd Mark Packham, we've been spending a lot more time on reverb than usual because Mark's been absolutely flooding our Facebook group and also our WhatsApp chat, the Guitar Nerds WhatsApp chat, with some really interesting and cool listings. I'm actually really grateful for him giving us insight into some cool things that we would.
I think we should bring down the Banhammer.
Yeah, maybe we should ultimately. But I mean, last week we saw the and ultimately purchased that flower dipped Gretsch Junior Jet which of course we have now realised is an utter dog.
It's not that
good
bad.
It will look good in videos.
Yeah, it will look good in videos.
It's all about what things look like, never about how practical they are or how well they play. As long as it looks good.
Completely agree. That's exactly what it's about. But we saw a couple of super cool things this week, courtesy of Mark Packham. The first one, Matt, you got rather excited about. It was the PV Wiggy.
The Wiggy. We have talked about it on the podcast before.
We have.
It's one of these has been on my radar for a long time, and mainly because it was designed by Dweezil Zappa, and I'm a massive Frank Zappa fan. And it's an all-solid-state amp that uses PV's trans-tube technology to output 100 watts of pure power. But it looks like the dashboard from a 1950s Cadillac.
So it's, yeah, I mean, you couldn't put a beer on top of it because it's a sort of semicircular top.
Yeah, it's like a domed cat. So, yeah. Flat base, obviously, like domed top with a bunch of dials that read things like oil, gas, miles per hour. And then it has a 5-band EQ where it doesn't actually give you what they actually do. It just, when you push them up, it says more. And as you lower them, it says less.
It's the
most ridiculous amp just ever made. I think it's one of the best signatures ever made.
And
it looks ridiculous.
What was the nature of trans tube technology?
I don't know. I think it was just their take on analog sounding tube emulation. Because I think the old PV Bandits had trans tube. I think it was something to do with the drive channel, if I remember rightly. I wonder if Google, our friend Google, can bring up anything about...
When did the PV Wiggy come out? What sort of era is that? Because I really haven't seen these ever.
I want to say... early 2000s.
Right.
I think.
That sounds about right for the sort of heyday of Transistor.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it wasn't. It might have been 90s. Might have been mid-90s. But I'm pretty sure from everything I've seen, it's usually early 2000s. But yeah, it's worth checking out because of just, it's ridiculous. And actually, I remembered it's also got two indicator lights on it. And when you engage things like the boost, I think it's the boost and another function, the indicator lights flash on and off.
Oh, okay. it's quite a weird one. They wouldn't be the first to sort of partner cars and guitar gear together.
Do you remember there was a company that made I think it was like Bentley or Rolls-Royce partnered with an amp manufacturer to make a boutique car amplifier. It was about $8,000. I think they only made five, and I think one went to Slash. I remember seeing it on, I think, World Guitars a number of years ago, and it was about $8,000.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we all obviously remember the Lexus Paul. That was a recent one. Do you remember, like a year ago or whenever it was, when I went to GitCon, there was a guitar brand that I spoke about for a while afterwards who made like a fold up guitar in like a leather suitcase and stuff. They were very, very high end weird guitars. They did a guitar for either a Lexus or a Mercedes catalog as well. That was shaped, the body was shaped like the logo. I've always found it a weird thing to sort of to partner up. There's another company actually, J Joy. Have you ever heard of them? J Joy Guitars?
No.
Yeah, they make really cool what was the Gretsch that was a solid body and it was kind of long and rectangular. What do they call that?
Oh, the Billy Bow.
So they do one of their models. All their models are car themes. They have very much a 50s Americana sort of theme to everything they make. But yeah, they did a guitar called the Bel Air, and all the
was
rotary fresh? Controls. Sorry,
was it fresh?
It was. I heard that Prince was thinking about using them. But no, they were all the controls were things like gas, oil. I don't know specifically what they were, but that, you know, instead of volume and tone.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen those, because actually, bizarrely enough, I was showing someone the Billy Bow the other day, and I was like, I wonder if Stephen Stearns made some custom shot ones. Of course he has. Of course there's a pink one, and it's amazing.
Oh wow!
And I was like, I remember we had one in when I worked at GAC, and I was like, it's such a rad guitar. It's so awesome, that Billy Bow. It's such a great body shape.
Yeah.
If I had the money, I'd definitely buy one.
It's definitely super cool. And I think a lot of those like 50s guitars, I guess, tend to be synonymous with that sort of American car kind of thing, just because there was a similar like concept aesthetic, I guess, between the two.
Totally. And I think Joe, you were about to say you think it's a weird partnership when guitar brands hook up with car brands.
Yeah.
But I actually think it makes complete sense, because people get obsessed, maybe isn't the right word, but you know, people have their favorite guitar brand and people have their favorite car brand. It's a very similar kind of, you know, guitars and cars by and large are kind of, you know, utilitarian things that people, maybe not with guitars, but you sort of need them to get around. But there's an awful lot of expression that you can have with different cars and different guitars.
Yeah.
And I think that if you're into both of those things, which I think is a pretty big crossover, I think that the three of us are probably in a minority in that, you know, we don't really care about cars. I mean, I'm the only one who can drive, and I've got a Ford Fiesta that takes me to work and back. Like, I don't really care too much. But I think there is a lot of people out there who've got, like, you know, they really do have an affinity for a certain type of car. And I think that, you know, you've just got to think back to, you know, the 50s when...
Well, it's Leo always the 50s, isn't it?
Well, Leo Fender was making... Yeah. The paints were the same, were Cadillac paints. You know, that's why it's Fiesta Red. That's why it's... That's why all those colours
exist.
Where they came from, yeah.
And also, Eric Clapton's custom shop is in
Mercedes Blue, which is the best colour.
I know, but what's mental, and I read this the other day, that he is a lot of these like famous guitar players are actually like avid vintage car collectors, and I think it was Ferrari actually made him a custom one-off Eric Clapton signature Mercedes, Ferrari.
What?
Right.
Yeah.
Fine.
I mean, that is mental, right? To be at that level and just be like, look, we're just going to build you a one-off, like, Ferrari. You just think, that is crazy.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's called that's it. It's called the SP12 EC. It was a concept model that they made into a one-off thing for Eric Clapton. So there you go. That was always my thing, though. It's like, if I was rich enough, I would have gone to Fender Custom Shop, bought a Lamborghini, and then said, build me a custom shop that matches this car. And then when I open the boot, the guitar comes out of the boot, and then it had a matching Blues Junior that was also the same colour as the car. I was like, that would be a ridiculous custom shop concept to have a matching car.
I'm
going
to level with you. That's a pretty weird thing to think about, quite that much.
they made a 9-neck Strat. I was like... I think it came from podcasts years ago when we were talking about that Japanese artist who has released something like 500 albums, and one of his albums came loaded into a Toyota, and then that was the only copy, and it was hardwired into the CD drive, so you couldn't change it. And the only way to get a copy of that record was to buy the car.
That's genius. That's genius.
I know.
It's just like when U2 upset everyone on Apple Music.
Yeah, by loading it into a phone and not being able to delete it.
Yeah, but I guess Dan Electro as well. They obviously have a car inspired range of pedals in the Fab series, kind of in everything they do, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's like I say, I think it's just that 50s Americana thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
You know,
so
I mean, that's why the Telecaster's called the Tele. It was named after television. The newest, greatest invention.
Yeah, I guess so. Why aren't guitars named like that anymore? Why isn't there a guitar called a Snapchat?
Well, I guess the modern day equivalent would be calling something like the iGuitar.
Yeah.
That's what it is, really.
Didn't Fender actually do that at one point?
Sorry?
Didn't Fender do that at one point? Didn't they make
iGuitar?
An iStrat?
Yes.
USB?
Yes.
Was it called the iStrat?
I can't remember what it was called, but I'm sure it had an I in the name. Maybe it wasn't.
I think IK Multimedia released a guitar that might have been called the iGuitar. Someone like that.
Yeah, I definitely.
Anyway, one of the other cool listings that's been brought to our attention was not something that I was aware of, but I was hoping Matt Knight, maybe you'd be able to shed some light on it. The Roland CompuRhythm.
The CR78 is actually this is the baby brother to the most famous
CR78.
The 78. So the 78 is, or was, still is, I guess, if you buy a vintage one, the first ever programmable drum machine.
Right.
And it's part of some of the most famous beats of all time, including In the Air Tonight, but that's not the track I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of that Phil Collins song with from the Dairy Milk advert where the gorilla plays the drums. What song am I thinking? Is that In the Air Tonight? Anyway, yeah. It's a famous Phil Collins song. Yeah. Heart of Glass by Blondie was also CR78. And the 68 is just a smaller version of that. But yeah, it's an all-analog drum machine that's a little square box, basically a little square wooden box with a bunch of different pre-programmed rhythms in it that you can then add in some extra notes or sounds. So you have things like slow rock, swing, foxtrot, tango, and they're originally designed as accompaniments to piano players for like music halls, or you know, someone would sit down and play an organ and they would just blast a tango beat on the old CR68 and then play keyboard along to it.
What a cool piece of kit. I'd love to get one of those and run it through a Space Echo.
Yeah, that's the great thing, because they're so easy to use. I did see one secondhand last time I was in Japan, and if it wasn't $2,000, I probably would have bought it. The 68s are like the younger brother.
68 is much more reasonable. You can pick those up for around £500.
Yeah, but the 78s are really expensive.
$2,500 seems to be the going price for those at the moment. But a wicked piece of gear.
Definitely cool. Yeah, definitely cool if you want a little simple drum machine. You can pick something up. I think there's various virtual versions of those at some point, but an early look into early drum machines that people had to like play along to.
Awesome. Yeah, wicked. So this week I've been building pedal boards a fair amount. So last week when we podcasted, that was I just got back from tour, from doing a little tour of the north of England with my band Polymath, and I actually ran into some trouble on the last show. I was getting a little bit of interference, a little bit of noise off of my board. And despite my my £3,000 Ashdown CTM300 head that I was using, and my custom-built cabs, and my lovely range of bass guitars, and all my great pedals on the very nice board and decent power supply. And I've spoken about this on the podcast before, because I don't like making my own patch cables. My board is actually put together via the free patch cables that are available in a big box at downstairs in the GAC warehouse that we send out with pedal orders.
Well, I'm glad that you've just publicized that.
Whatever, that's fine. But yeah, so I've always been, you know, a bit of a non-believer in that, but for the first time ever, I was, you know, whilst it wasn't that anything was broken in particular, it became apparent that it was certainly the patch cables causing the issue. So this week I've been putting back together my pedal board using a proper set of cut to measure patch cables, but also I have to play some guest guitar in my girlfriend Emma's band. She's got a show coming up, and she needs some atmospheric additional guitar in her set. So she's tasked me with that. So this week, well, specifically last night, I was putting together a board to try and like a soundscapey board. And I wanted it to be small, but super soundscapey. And I found, despite all the massive amount of pedals we've got here, I have completely accidentally managed to put together a board with no boutique brands on it.
Good work.
Yeah, I know. I feel really sort of lame and corporate, but I've gone for... What was that massive Boss volume pedal that they did?
The FV50.
Yeah, the ridiculously sized one. I've gone for one of those just because it's got a nice weight to it, and it was the only one that I had that wasn't attached to a board. The TC Electronics Sub and Up Mini, just because it's a great octaver that tracks really well. The Boss Angry Driver, because it might be the best sounding drive pedal I've ever heard. And then for modulation, I'm using the TC Dimension C and the Tailspin. So they're two entry-level pedals for chorus and vibrato. And then on the delay front, I've got the JHS Pink Panther and the Boss RE20.
Oh, the RE20.
Classic, but
yeah, I keep forgetting about it.
I feel like
I keep
I'm being a bit
again,
boring.
Like, yeah.
Oh, there's nothing. There's still nothing that sounds better than it. I mean, Jay will attest to that, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I was just staying out of it because people are bored of hearing my opinion on it. But it's the greatest pedal of all time, as far as I'm concerned.
The second switch for just being able to oscillate out of control is
amazing. Yeah.
It's so usable.
I am actually on the talk of Space Echo. I'm going to raise this again, and maybe this is something for people in the Facebook group to mention. I'm never going to sell my Space Echo ever. I'm not going to make that mistake again. So, do I get it refinished in pink and just have a pink Space Echo?
That's going to affect its resale.
Yeah, but if you're never going to sell it, and you're just going to keep it forever.
I mean, I think we're old enough and wise enough to know that you should never, ever sell that Space Echo again. Under no circumstances should you sell it.
So,
is there a better Space Echo you could get?
No, I could just get more Space Echoes.
Yeah,
the question
I guess
is, it's not is there a better one? It's like, actually, technically, I have all of them sitting behind me apart from the 555, which I kindly gave back to Jay. I could have kept hold of.
Sorry, but when you say you kindly gave back to Jay, I kindly lent you out of the goodness of my heart.
You did, and I got it serviced for you. Have you plugged it in yet since it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I have. No. Yeah. I was playing it just this week, actually, on Monday. Oh, nice. On Monday, I had Monday off, and I borrowed an amp from work and was playing it through that, and it sounded absolutely amazing. And I've got
that's right.
This month,
you were pairing up, weren't you? Pairing up your limited edition finished Princeton with the 12-inch speaker, your pink Mustang, and the Space Echo, which is what an incredible pairing.
It sounded amazing, and I've got this Monday and Tuesday off work as well, so I'll probably be doing the same thing.
That Princeton is awesome.
It's amazing, that 12-inch speaker. I mean, I don't want to go on about it again because we spoke about it a lot last week, but yeah, that 12-inch speaker is just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's nice. Absolutely fantastic. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we should dive headfirst into a big barrel of news. Here's the jingle. News. Yeah, I'm going to have to make more of those. So the news this week, as I said, it's pretty light, but we're going to kick things off with Jay Cross talking about the Nutter Astro. Nutter Guitars, they're a brand that you two met at SNAMM this year. Is that
you
right?
Two?
You and Matt.
You? Oh, right, okay. Not Bono.
I mean,
they might have been there. I didn't see him. But Nutter Guitars. We met Brian Nutter as we were walking around on the first day. And it was actually his Ensign that really caught our eye.
And that was the mini guitar, is that right?
It's not a mini guitar, no. It's I think it might be slightly shorter scale. Just bringing up the specs now, because I will be honest, I can't quite remember. In fact, the website is dreadful. I really hope he sorts it out, because the website is very, very bad. Oh, there we go. Yeah, it's 22¾-inch scale, so it's quite short scale. But he had one there in pink, obviously, which was what drove us towards it. But yeah, the Astro is a very, very cool looking guitar. It is that kind of tread the line between that retro futuristic look, sort of Gretschy looking, Diamondy looking humbuckers, and a Bigsby, which, you know, people know my thoughts on just boshing a Bigsby on stuff for the sake of it, but that's fine. These are their own humbuckers, Rocket Booster 5, which is a great name for a pickup, if you ask me.
Yeah, it is a great name for a pickup.
And it looks really, really cool. I'm really into how there seems to be a bit of a resurgence of this kind of like retro futuristic style of guitars.
Well, there's an Albert Lee thing to it.
What's that, sorry?
There's a bit of an Albert Lee element to
yeah,
this
I guess
guitar.
I guess there's a bit of that going on. I mean, I'm getting some like the Pinto vibes. Maybe like sort of early Woolworths type style guitars, 60s style guitars, but it's obviously it's mahogany. I think it's not a plastic guitar or anything. It looks fantastic, and
they've certainly gone for those 60s style controls. There's an individual switch for each humbucker as well, right next to it.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. That's pretty old school. That's sort of like 60s idea of shoving on as many controls as you possibly could.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I just think it's great. I think it's a very, very cool, a very cool brand. And I hope that he, you know, starts to get a bit of recognition, because it's, there's a lot of good stuff going on, and he's doing it all. If I remember correctly, he's doing everything himself. Yeah. He's, you know, and the guitars really weren't huge money. I mean, this is saying
it's quite a price tag on this one, isn't it?
This one is, yeah. This one,
I think, this is his like top level model, I think.
Yeah, this one's $3,000 USD. But like the Ensign, which is the one that we saw at NAMM, is $1,100. And you know, yeah, it's kind of a stripped back spec, but that's what we're into. I just still, everything that I saw of his was absolutely fantastic, except for the website, which is dreadful.
you know what this reminds me of a little bit? Do you remember Fret King did a similar sort of shaped model? Do you remember Fret King? I haven't thought about Fret King for years, but they made some fantastic stuff.
I think you can get, they're like Wilkinson guitars, right? So they were all Wilkinson parts, if I remember rightly. Like all the hardware on those was killer.
Yeah, they were wicked.
Just looking on not a website here, it looks like as well as the... God, this is really not great. As well as the Nutter, sorry, as well as the Astro Standard or Custom, there's also a stripped back version, which is a bit cheaper. But yeah, just honestly, trying to negotiate this website is proving very difficult. The top end one is the Captain. And there's a cheaper one, which is the Commander, which, excuse me, only has two pickups, doesn't have quite so many pickup switching options, and doesn't have a Bigsby. So is a bit more of a sort of rock and roll guitar, I guess. All nitro finish. Yeah, it looks great. Really, really great. Really great. Definitely recommend people check out Nutter Guitars. There's some cool stuff.
Yeah, if you're
going
into cool retro stuff, I think Nutter are pretty swag. Matt, Full Tone have released a new pedal.
They have. Full Tone, one of the earliest in the boutique boom, I guess. They've been making pedals since, they've been making pedals since 1996, which doesn't sound that long ago, but actually, unfortunately, it was quite a long time ago now. And they have had the Super Trem for quite a long time, which is an amazing sounding trem, really natural. The problem is, it's in a massive box that takes up so much pedalboard space in today's, you know, real estate wars where you have to try and fit as much onto a pedalboard as possible.
It was a huge rectangular thing, wasn't it? Like a sideways rectangular, I seem to remember.
Almost, it was like, it's like the first time you saw a big box Electro-Harmonix pedal and you opened it up and realised the circuit board's about the size of a 50 pence piece and that there was no need for it to be in a box quite that size. Sort of almost the same with the Super Trem. So they have finally come up with the Super Trem Junior, which is a really cool looking small box Trem, on-off, tap tempo control, which I absolutely love. Which is always really handy for tremolo. It goes a slow, and this is crazy, a full cycle as slow as 10 seconds.
Wow.
And the fastest speeds hit 220 BPM. So it goes pretty quick.
There's I'm not sure why you'd ever need it that slow.
Why not? You know, you never know what you might want to use it. The one cool thing, obviously, apart from the onboard tap tempo, and there's an external tap jack as well, true bypass switching. There's also a half or double speed hold feature, which I think works on either the tap tempo or the on-off. But the one great feature, which I think more Trems need to have, is the option of a boost. So this has a 15 dB boost in there. And that's mainly because a lot of the times when you turn on a Trem, you get a perceived volume drop because obviously a tremolo is going up and down in volume. So it always feels like your guitar signal takes a bit of a hit. So by adding that boost on there, by adding that kind of level jump, when you get the Trem on, you get a much sort of fatter and fuller attack when you switch the effect on. It's a JFET preamp, which is really nice, and it's proper Photocell Trem. So that's a really cool addition to their lineup. And people who have heard or know about the Super Trem obviously know how good it is, but the problem is it's always taken up too much pedal board space. This one is only 4 inches by 4 inches. And runs on 18 volts for that extra bit of headroom.
That's cool. I've always been impressed with Full Tone, how they are a brand that definitely focus on the way their pedals sound and spend virtually no time on how their pedals look. And whilst I love a good bit of screen printing as much as the next person, there's something to be said for brands like Full Tone, like I guess Karl Martin. Yeah. People like that who are just there to make their pedals sound
and
really good.
I mean, the thing is with Full Tone is they make some of my favourite effects ever. Obviously, they make the Tube Tape Echo, which is an
absolutely
actual,
unbelievable.
Yeah, and I mean, their solid state one, I think they're $899. It's not tons of money for a proper, you know, tape echo, and they make one that's actually got tubes in it. I think it's about $1,499, but they also make that 80s Rack Chorus, which is a £1,200 fully analog stereo Rack Chorus.
That sounds like you in a piece of rack gear.
Yeah, and I have heard it, and it does sound absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously also make the OCD, which is one of the best sounding drive pedals available on the market.
Yeah, I mean, and that's been in constant production for about 20 years.
We actually didn't mention it on the news because it wasn't that much of a big deal, but they have released a new limited edition black version of the OCD.
Which I believe is an exclusive to Chicago Music Exchange, right?
Yeah, that's right, that's right. But super cool, what a great pedal.
Yeah.
ISP Technologies. What is it that ISP make, Jay? They made something that was popular.
The Decimator.
The Decimator. What was that?
It's a noise gate. Yeah, like a hum eliminator.
Right, I see. Well, anyway, ISP have just brought to the table their new Vector FS8, which is a guitar cabinet come floor monitor. It is a new addition to this this craze at the moment for FR speakers for guitar. So a tilted, very functional looking,
very functional looking.
Yeah, 175 watt FR speaker designed for guitarists using conjunction with their Helix, their Headrush, their Axe FX, whatever it is that they're plugging into. But it's interesting, I think, whilst this sounds like quite a boring piece of news in that it's a You know, it's essentially a PA speaker for guitarists. It doesn't look special, and it's not from a brand that we would necessarily talk about otherwise. I do think it's really interesting that we're starting to see these type of monitor-based FR-FR speakers coming out from brands that are not, that don't have a horse in the race when it comes to, you know, a multi-effect. Multi-effects amp modeler sort of thing. I understand when Headrush and Helix both bring their cabinets to the table because they need something to run in conjunction to their pedal boards. But when you see other brands start to try and take a piece of this pie, you realize how much this really is taking off and how much the guitar world is changing when people are bringing out FR-FR speakers for guitarists. So I think this is sticking, guys. I think this is potentially the start of the end for individual stomp boxes and amplifiers.
Well, actually, one thing I read this a few times, and then I was like, I'm not really sure, you know, what sort of how special this is. But then I reread it again and was like, oh, you can actually like flip a switch and then it just becomes a normal guitar cab. So,
oh, really?
So it's got a. It's dual use, providing amazing tone for players using a digital guitar processor that incorporates a speaker sim out, or with the flip of a switch, the FS8 becomes a guitar cabinet for players who prefer using a pedal board or guitar preamp.
Oh, right. So, well, how about that?
In guitar mode, you can connect the output of your favourite pedal board or preamp directly into the FS8s for better tone than using a standard 4x12. And then you can still mic it up and send it to front of the house. So I guess it's not only an FR-FR, it's more of a, I guess, an option for people. Say, for example, if you built a pedal board and you put like one of those.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There were preamps on it. You could go into this in cabinet mode because it's got, I guess it's got a power amp built into it, which is why that's where the cabinet mode and just plugging a preamp directly into it comes into play. And then you've got a monitor for stage. You don't necessarily need a 4x12 behind you. And then you can mic it up and still send it to front of house. But you've always got the best angle and the best sound as a monitor. Because I guess a lot of people, you know, you never know what sort of PA system you're going to get when you go to a venue, really.
Yeah, that's true. You never know what the monitoring is going to be like. I mean, I do think that's a problem that affects guitarists a lot less than other musicians. Like, you know, I think bass players and drummers can really suffer from a bad set of
floor
monitors.
Yeah, but guitar players like to hear themselves.
That is true. That is
we love the sound of our own instrument. That's the thing, isn't it? It's like, oh, just, you know, keep cranking up the guitar. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I haven't played a gig for about 7 years, but I'd probably be like that if I did.
Yeah,
I mean, actually. Whenever I play, I always want to hear the guitar more than the bass. Because I'm the one playing the bass, so I know what the bass. I know what I'm playing. I just want to make sure that I'm playing in time with everyone else.
I know I'm playing the root notes. I just
well, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I can feel for that. I'm actually similar. I never have anything in my monitors at the front, mainly because I'm running around a lot. But yeah, it there's no need.
Yeah. For my monitor mix, it's always I want to be able to hear the guitars and the Dan Grace's vocals, because me and Dan do quite a bit of I wouldn't use the word harmonizing, but
let's use that word loosely. It's fine.
Very, very loosely. So I just need to make sure that, obviously whatever Dan is doing is correct. I just need to make sure that I haven't messed up. So, but I never really have much bass in my monitor mix, just cause like, I know what I'm playing.
Yeah,
that's kind of the way I feel about it. I've never been that bothered about mono mixes, honestly. Maybe it's because I'm, you know, whenever I'm playing, it will be like 25 minutes max, and it's, well, I mean, how badly wrong can it really go? But I've never been that precious about it. Like, if they're there, then great. But I think I just grew up playing so many shows without monitors that it just, you know, you're playing in small crap punk venues,
yeah,
that it's like that I just grew up without them, and it just it's sort of it's just kind of always been a luxury for me.
I almost find sometimes when you play the when I play sort of the bigger venues and they're quite good at it, I find it a little off-putting if I can hear myself too much. I can hear all the mistakes.
I always think it's weird when I play a venue and there's a front of house technician and a monitor technician. I'm just like, crazy. Like, I can't believe people get that precious about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have like a Space Echo technician that would just be there to monitor the amount of Space Echo that constantly goes through the monitors. It's like, it's not enough. There's not enough repeats coming through these monitors. They crank up that intensity. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't played a gig for so long, I can't even remember what it's like to sound check. So the ungiggable rig really did its job, I think.
Jay Cross, a man whose weight has fluctuated more than most guitarists ever will in an entire lifetime.
Are you talking about me?
No, not you. Bernie Marsden. Marsden.
I'm not really into that intro, but I suppose there we go. Bernie Marsden. So there is a new-ish PRS, which is the Bernie Marsden signature model.
Well, the Bernie Marsden, when it first came out, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
I think it was longer than that.
I remember it coming out when I was at GAC, I'm sure.
Yeah, it definitely came out at GAC. I reckon it came out maybe 2012 or 2011 originally. So,
it was an SE.
It came out at the same time as... Go on.
It sold out before any of us could get our hands on them. It was one of the most popular PRS releases the year that it came out.
What, last year?
No, the first run.
No, not at all. No, we had loads in the shop.
I don't think the first ones were limited run.
Right. Okay.
I keep seeing like, oh yeah, you know, they were super limited, but I don't remember them being super limited. I seem to remember us having loads of them. Maybe they were limited because GAC bought them all. I don't know, but
certainly within the last like year or two, they've done another run, and those were really limited really hard to get hold of.
Well, anyway, they have released another 300 of these. So I mean, it seems like a weird thing to do if you're re-releasing something that was super popular but only doing a really small number of them. But you know, I suppose we are where we are. I always really like this guitar. I thought that when these came out, they came out as part of the 245 series, which, as I say, I'm sure was 2012 or something, and I always thought that this was the standout model, probably because it's the most like a Les Paul, really. So obviously Bernie Marsden at one point was one of the owners of the Peter Green Les Paul, which the Peter Green Gary Moore Les Paul, which is now owned by Kirk Hammett. And his original signature model was a kind of SE version of that guitar.
Jay, can I just correct you? It wasn't Peter Green's one. He just had a 59,
he called
the Beast.
Bernie Marsden bought... He ended up with that Peter Green Les Paul. I'm sure he did.
No, he didn't.
Really?
No, his one was the Beast, which Gibson actually made into a collector's choice. I think that was just his... That was... The Beast was number 8, which I remember being one of the better ones out of all of it. He bought it in... I'm just having a quick look. He bought that guitar in 1974 and used it ever since. At the point in 1974, obviously, the guitar was only 15 years old, so everyone thought it was an absolute heap of junk. I can buy this 70 Strat. It weighs about £20. So that's absolutely fine. Why do I want that Les Paul? Yeah, no, the Beast was his... The Beast was his own guitar. It wasn't one of the...
I knew about that one, but I was sure that he had...
Gary Moore had the Peter Green one, got that one from Peter Green. He owned that until, obviously, his passing. So
no, he didn't. He sold it before that.
Oh, no, sorry. Yeah, he had two 59s, and he sold one, which went to... Did it go to...
It went
to that famous collector, who did the collector's choice, which was collector's choice number one.
Yep.
Which they did two versions. They did a NOS version and a Relic version. The NOS version was the something something collector's Les Paul. And then they had to legally do the Relic one, was had to be called the Gary Moore. And then that was collector's choice number one. And then he sold it, and it went into like Phil Harris from Harris Guitars had that guitar for a bit. He was like the custodian of it. And then when the collector sold it, he sold it to Kirk Hammett.
I was sure that somewhere down the line it ended up in Bernie Marsden's hands, but obviously that's not the case.
The 59 he's owned for a long time. He's had since 74, but he doesn't really play it anymore. But he does.
Well, of course not. It's worth like £1 million.
Well, actually, it does still get regular gigs from Joe Bonamassa. A lot of the times when he's still in the UK, he still plays. He plays Bernie Marsden's.
Right. Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, there we go. I suppose if you've, Joe Bonamassa's probably stumping up the insurance money for it. So,
What are you talking about? He's not very well off. He's a poor man. He plays blues rock. He's taking a vow of poverty,
of course.
Matt Knight, Roland have doubled up recently with popular shoe brand Puma.
Yes.
I assume this is to create the first collaboration, which is a trainer and also a stomp box.
I mean, that would be amazing. Obviously, I know someone did the... It was Converse did the Wah shoes, right?
That's right, yeah.
No, these are a limited edition. I won't go into because I'm sure not... Well, I don't know. There might be some sneaker collectors out there. I know it's a big thing right now. It's ridiculous money for some shoes. But yeah, we've done a collaboration with Puma to do some 808-inspired shoes, which are extremely limited edition. So if you're into Roland and you're into Roland merch, like I am, then I would definitely get a pair. 80s inspired retro Pumas in collaboration with the 808 drum machine. So one is orange, yellow, red, black and white. And then one is sort of black and white with the 808 colours on the side and the 808 colours on the sole design as well.
There's been so much Boss merch for their drum machines recently. Was it the 808 that had the turntable made for it?
No, because obviously we do, and we make DJ gear as well. But 808 is obviously one of the most legendary drum machines of all time.
Of course,
and we are coming up to 808 Day.
Yes.
August 8th, yeah.
Yeah, and I got my limited 808 boutique bag the other day, which is quite cool. So,
it's cool. 808. I was watching, there's a series on Netflix at the moment called Hip Hop Evolution, which is really, really worth a watch if you are interested in that side of things. I've only seen the first couple of episodes, but they talk actually a little bit about the 808 and how it was Afrika Bambaataa who was the first... they reckon the first ever it was his record Planet Rock,
yeah,
which was the first record that had the 808 on it, really, really, really interesting. The documentary is fantastic. Actually, there's a bit where Afrika Bambaataa is being interviewed just like in his old neighborhood, and the interviewer keeps getting interrupted by people just walking up to him being like, Bam, my man, thank you so much. People just keep coming up to him like he can't do the interview because he is so loved in like the area that he grew up in the Bronx.
Amazing.
And it's just, yeah, it's so cool. But yeah, it's a really interesting story. And like Afrika Bambaataa was like, he basically like drew to a close a period of like really intense gang violence in the Bronx, basically by getting warring factions to sort of put aside their musical differences and being like, listen, we're all into this new music that's hip hop. Let's just like all just like make it together rather than like killing each other. How does that sound? And everyone's like, oh, actually, that's a really, really good idea. And then after that, like, there was like a kind of a bit of just a whole coming together, and hip hop wouldn't have evolved in the way that it did without Afrika Bambaataa and his drive to use these new technologies. Wow. It's really interesting. Yeah, it's really, really cool. But yeah, he's all about the 808. So yeah, I definitely recommend checking out. Sorry, just a quick tangent. I definitely recommend checking out that documentary series. Cool. It's really good.
Questions.
Anyway, this week, as with every week, well, actually, not with every week. I don't think since I've hosted, we've pretty much done no questions on this podcast, but we're going to do some questions. So all the questions are provided unwittingly by the contributors to the Guitar Nerds Facebook forum.
Unwittingly, did you say?
Yes, I did. Well, they don't know that I'm going to take their questions off of. They're just genuinely asking for advice, and I am usurping that content from the Facebook page and then recycling it as original content for this podcast. And you can get involved in that too. Ask questions that we'll answer on the weekly podcast. Just head over to our Facebook group, facebook.com/guitar nerds forum. Mark Kadawacki says, the Sublime Tomcat is a very cool guitar. Are there any other similar non-Gibson/Epiphone Les Paul Slab P90 TV Yellow guitars on the market?
I love how specific that was.
Yeah.
It's like pirate memory games all over again. For anyone, I guess we should say, for anyone who maybe didn't listen to the podcast when we were talking about Summer Nam, Sublime was one of the brands that we kind of raved about because we looked at them and went, wow, these guitars are amazing. They must be about £2,500. And then they were actually £899.
Yeah. Their range does go the whole way up. They do stuff for around the £2,000 mark. But the Tomcat Standard, which I think is the one being referred to here, I mean, it's kind of, to be honest, it's not really a Les Paul Junior. It's a Telecaster with two P90s, which is...
It's like a Telecaster Deluxe scratch plate with P90s. Although the bridge humbucker doesn't look... The bridge pickup doesn't look like a P90. But it's slab body, bolt on, roasted flame maple neck. This is a great looking guitar.
Yeah, it's a fantastic looking guitar. I think this does depend what you're looking at. The Tomcat Standard is 100% a pair of P90s because it's the same pickup, neck and bridge.
I just realised I'm looking at the Deluxe.
Yeah, the Tomcat Standard is the most affordable one, and I was unsure as to what direction to take Mark's question in because it was like, well, if I was going to suggest non Gibson Les Paul style guitars, I wouldn't be suggesting a Tomcat anyway because this isn't that. This is a Telecaster. So if he wants similar guitars, so we can answer this in one of two ways, guys. We can either suggest similar sort of Telecaster options or similar Les Paul options. I would assume because he's asked for a Les Paul type thing, we should move in that direction.
Wants that kind of single cut type design.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
How about... Here's a first suggestion for you. How about the Reverend Flat Rock, which looks almost identical in that kind of sense, slab body.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's inevitable if we're going to talk about guitars that are, that are similar, then we were obviously going to come on to the Reverend.
It's not a slab. It's not a slab body though. There's a contour there.
Is it topped? Is it?
Yeah.
It's got a little arm curve. I still think that's not the end of the world.
Although you can have a slab body and then obviously it can still be a slab of wood then contoured, can't it? Unless you want it completely like non-contoured body as well. Like in terms of the arm cut. The kind of rib cage cut, I guess.
Yeah.
But I was just on the side note, I went on their website to have a look, and I can't believe how many guitars they actually make.
Oh, it's bananas, isn't it? There's like, so many
they
different
make that
models.
Many guitars now, and the amount of signature guitars they make.
Yeah, this is now our bi-weekly Reverend plug, where we go into the Reverend guitar website and go, oh my god, look at all this stuff. But they are a great company, and they do so much stuff. It's such a broad range of guitars now available from Reverend. Yeah. They're definitely one of the most exciting brands, expanding at this point in time.
Yeah. What about? I'm just trying to look, see what sort of spec it comes in. Equally cool. Not so much more money. What about the Titan?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a fantastic idea.
KR1 standard. Basewood body, kind of similar shape. It's got dual humbuckers rather than P90s. I mean, you could probably speak to Doug and they would probably swap something like that. In fact, you can actually... You can change the colour and you can change the pickup option if you want P90s as well.
Yeah, I think for something that's a good price, a really original and very, very stylish, then the Titan stuff is absolutely up there.
I remember reading somewhere, I can't remember where, but I saw Doug say that the KR1 is going to be discontinued. They are only going to be doing the KR1, I think, until the end of the year, when they will be releasing the KR2, which is going to be similar, but there will be, I didn't see what the differences are, but it will be a similar style guitar. So if you have been thinking about getting a Titan KR1, and if you haven't seen what the KR1 is, then definitely go over to the Titan Guitars website and check it out. So Titan is kind of the budget brand of
Squire
of Doug Cower from Cower Guitars, and it's just the Titan stuff is kind of stripped back. There aren't as many options, but they're still absolutely fantastic. Ryan from 60 Cycle Hum uses a KR1 on a lot of his videos, and I was talking to Ryan about Cower when we were at NAMM together, and
we went to see the Cower booth at Winter NAMM, didn't we?
I didn't get a chance to.
Titan were there with those wicked guitar racks that we saw, those kind of guitar racks.
And because then Cower, I nearly dropped a camera on one of the guitars, do you remember?
Yes. There was one Cower guitar, there was a couple of Titans. Cower guitars were in the boutique guitar display when they did every single guitar they make, including a mandolin, all in the same colour. Because that spurred my love for the Banshee, which is their kind of Firebird
style guitar. Oh, it's unbelievable.
And I just, they had a 3P91 in seafoam green with gold hardware, and it looked so good. I'm like, a pink one would look awesome. If I can save up $3,500, I really want to buy one.
Jay, you were going to say something about Ryan? I interrupted you.
Oh, yeah, no, just Ryan's got one of these KR1s and he absolutely loves it. So it's...
Great value for money.
Yeah, very, very good. And if you're talking about good value for money, I actually think probably the... whose question was this? Mark. Mark's question is probably the best option is a GS1, Gordon Smith.
Yeah,
they're a fantastic brand.
Yeah, great choice.
You know, I'm just looking on here at the moment. GS1 in 60s yellow is £621. I mean, that seems like such good value for money. And if you want, you can get a two pickup model. You know, if you for one reason or another feel like you need a neck pickup, I don't really understand, but you know, whatever.
Neck pickup all the way. Who wants a bridge?
But yeah, you know, the GS2s aren't too much more. So I just think Gordon Smith is just such a great company. Make fantastic guitars.
Absolutely. Oh, on the super budget end of the spectrum. To counter that, I think we spoke about it a little bit recently, the Cort Sunset TC, which is their sort of Telecaster come Les Paul Junior hybrid guitar, which is, you know, super affordable. I think it's less than £400 and that just really, really looks the part. It's relict. You've got a P90 in the neck, Telecaster bridge and Telecaster pickup, brass saddles, everything about it's cool. Super cool guitar for not a lot of dosh.
Yeah.
Andy Moorish. Actually, we're going to because that is quite a lengthy question, and we have nattered on longer than I thought we were going to. Okay, so Steve Haynes says, if you had to buy a kit from kitbuiltguitars.co.uk, what kit would you get, and what would you do affordably to make it awesome? Matt Knight.
It's a tricky one. I mean, funny you we were just talking about those GS1s because they actually do a double cut Les Paul Junior with a mahogany body, and it's $94.99. I'm like, actually, it's a little project. I think that's quite a cool one. I think the only thing with these kit builds is their guitars are like, I mean, I'm just delving a little bit more into the website, but I think they're all unfinished, which is obviously how they keep the cost down. But it's a good start because so many times, and I think we've talked about it before, doing something like a Warmoth build, you end up spending as much money as you would getting someone to build the guitar for you professionally. And then it's absolutely worthless by the time it's finished. So doing something like this, where you can have a bolt-on like Les Paul Junior for $94.99, that's actually not bad. And I think that's one of the... I would always go for like a more stripped back model because I do a 335 with like a budget Bigsby for £150.
That's crazy.
I feel like you could do more with the Les Paul Junior, maybe, but then again, it's a wraparound bridge, so you're kind of limited at that point.
The 335 has to be bolt on, right? So I'd be really concerned about getting a bolt on 335. I don't think there's any way you can make that not rubbish.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the Flying V would be a good one.
I was going to say the Flying V. I think that's the one that I'd go for. I think that I'd struggle to be able to justify buying a proper 335 at any point. But I do think they look amazing, and I just think if you could, it's the sort of thing that for £100, if I had a week off or whatever and a bit of time and a spare a bit of money knocking about, I could see myself buying one of these and doing it up in pink and then just like having it on the wall. I think it would look really, really cool because it's just, I've always loved the look of the 335, but I don't think I'd ever be able to pull it. Sorry, I've always loved the look of the Flying V, but I don't think I'd ever be able to pull it off. Also a 335 as it happens, but I don't think I'd be able to get away with playing it live and not looking like a complete dingo. So I think just having it, but I do think they look amazing. So yeah, I think I'd do that. I think I'd get one of these.
I think the Flying V is not a bad cop. It's one of the only ones where you don't have to do any sanding on the headstock or any reshaping, should I say, on the headstock, because it's already shaped to a point. A lot of the Telecaster and Stratstar ones come with a big paddle headstock, so you're going to need to shape that in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I'm not really into that.
Although I would say for sort of no, because realistically, like the what draws me to the Les Paul Junior is it's a single pickup thing. It's so easily moddable and affordable to mod. So you could you could pop one sort of good P90 or humbucker straight into the neck, finish that up in. Why not get one of those wipe-on wood stain finishes in like a pink for that? And realistically, that's going to cost you £30. Because I think this is the thing. If you're going to get one of these and get it finished, for a refin, what you're looking at, another £200, something like that, to get it refinned. If you do it with a nice stain, you can still get some cool colours. And I wish I could remember the name of the company right now, but there is a company that specialise in wipe-on wood grain finishes for guitars. They're called something like wood and stain, but it doesn't matter. but seriously, you can get one of their packs for £30, and you can do that at home. And then for the sake of spending, £60 on a decent pickup for the guitar. Maybe, I'm sure for the sort of project this would be, that the hardware that comes with it would be fine, because, there's not much to a wraparound bridge. I think with some of the other things, some of the other instruments on here, you would want to upgrade the hardware if you were trying to make
something. Oh, totally. And you'd need to get some better pickups, and you're probably going to need to do a fair amount to these. That's why I don't think I'd ever actually play it live, but I think as a nice piece of art to have knocking about, I think it would be cool. But who knows what these £109, you can barely buy a decent set of pickups for 109 quid. and they're doing it alongside everything else. Like, I mean, goodness knows what they're going to sound like. I mean, who knows? Maybe we're selling it short, but I somewhat doubt it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to do one last question very quickly before we wrap this up. Wes Spence says, I'm looking for the perfect guitar for punk rock, which is a reasonable question. He then follows it up with one of the most unreasonable statements I've ever read. I've been thinking about the Dean Dave Mustaine Zero Punk signature guitar. What else should I be looking at? Now, I think there is a potential here that the Dean Dave Mustaine Zero Punk is called the Zero Punk because it's not punk at all. The Zero Punk Dave Mustaine is a, I think it's a, it's an Explorer body shape with a single humbucker in the bridge, and that might be the only punk rock thing about it. Of course, the single humbucker in a bridge is a popular standard of models like the Tom DeLonge Strat and 333. Jay Cross, this is a perfect question for you to wrap up relatively quickly. If you were looking for the ultimate punk rock guitar, what sort of thing would you be looking for?
I reckon I have been to about 1,000 gigs, and I reckon that means I have seen probably about 3,500 bands, and like punk bands, and I can't think of a single time I've ever seen a punk band play Dean. And I can think of a handful of occasions when I've seen a punk band play a 335. I keep saying 335, an Explorer. So I'm not really sure where this guitar has come from. I've never heard of it before or anything. But I don't really know why it's called a Zero Punk. I mean, you know, whatever, punk rock is about doing what you want, I guess, but I'm not really sure that this is all that, but a Telecaster for me. I mean, if you're talking about sort of I would say the guitar that I see most regularly played by punk bands is a Telecaster. You see a lot of Les Pauls. Increasingly, there's a lot of Jazzmasters and Jaguars, but far and away the most popular guitar that I see bands play is Telecasters, and that is because they are the best guitars in the entire world.
Really? Would you say that punk rock then has moved away from the sort of humbucker in the bridge format?
I guess it really depends. It really depends. I mean, it's such a, like, punk is such a broad genre that it's, you know, it's not quite as simple as just saying like, well, this is the punk rock. The punk rock sound, but I definitely Telecasters are more popular than Les Pauls. I just think that like you can get such a great drivey sound from that bridge pickup. You know, it's articulate. It's you know, because punk in general, it's not a very distorted guitar sound. You know, it's not like you're not looking at like super heavy metal sound here. Usually it's just like a distorted clean sound, and that you get that from a telly. You know, that's perfect for that, if you ask me.
Sure, perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Telecasters are the best.
So the answer to this question is, of course, Baja Telecaster.
Of course.
Well, that is it from us here on the regular podcast, but we will be continuing over on the Patreon episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early, and $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, plus access to bonus features and mini-series such as the Brantons Rant On. $10 a month makes you one of our executive backers, granting you access to everything already mentioned, plus the prestigious honour of having your name read out in one breath by me. Are we ready?
Oh, we need a thing.
We need a thing. We need a backing track. I should have busted out my drum machine.
Oh, we should have got an 808 going or something.
That is true.
Hold on. Wait.
You missed out.
Wait.
No. Oh, he's unzipping his trousers.
I think it's got batteries in it. It has got batteries in it. Let's turn up the volume. Right, we need to find a beat. We need to find something.
Matt, give me a beat.
Oh.
Okay. Ready?
Stephen Conrady, Scott Hamilton, Ivor John Mayer, Marin Peters, Golden G. Richard III, Sean Arbo, Joshua Mitchell, Chris Wilford, Cuthbert Son, Ryan McDermott, Robert Cousins, Rob Crew, Nate Nagel, Tucker Avedon, Ernie Cooper, Everyday Baker, Christoph Brexit, Zane Omar, Matt Roberts, Dave Lee, Derek Witzer, Martin Cliff, Matt Davies, Aaron Sherman, Blake Wyland, Jake Gray, Christopher Loses, Juan Correa, Scott Kennedy, Robin Smith, Rob Nordwig, Rob Grant, Derek Grinch, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Carlos Matcher, Steve Michael, Blair Downs, Mark Cross, Brad Payne, J.D. Short, Andy McKenzie, Laurie Anston, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Phil Townsend, Moore Gravett, Colin Anderson!
I like the pitch shift at the end there.
Yes, it almost wasn't deliberate. But there you have it. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all of our various channels are displayed in all of their glory. And you can even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That's it from us this week. We'll catch you next time for some more guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Cheers, guys.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.